America prides itself on doing big things. Stretching a railroad across the continent, storming the beaches of Normandy, landing a man on the moon, building highways and the infrastructure for the internet. Our politics today seem incapable of producing change on that scale.
A couple of important features.
We face a civilizational challenge right now, and the clock is ticking. If we don't radically transform our economy away from fossil fuels in the next decade, we are courting climate catastrophe.
We are facing a national crisis. This is about American lives.
The Green New Deal is a vision for reinventing American society around a new vision of a carbon-free economy that works for everyone. Is it a fantasy or the beginnings of a new historical pivot point? The answer is unfolding right now before our eyes. This is All in America, the Green New Deal, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
All right. All right, so that's the expert on climate is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and that's MSNBC. According to them, she's the expert. So I just thought you might enjoy that little moment. But the truth is that we have been led up a path that has been going nowhere on climate, whether it's global warming or population control. I remember the rainforest. That was a big thing when I was growing up. There's always a disaster lurking. If you watch CNN International when you travel, it's like one disaster after another. The crops are failing. This is happening. Starvation. It's amazing. And, of course, there are crises around the globe, but it's just an exploitation. What we have had in the last 20-plus years, probably 50 years, more like that, or 60, is an exploitation of things that have some element of truth in them, but have been twisted into something that is just very, very far from the truth. Well, today I'm going to be talking about what happened with global warming. Is it still a thing? Is the planet still going to implode, or did we miss our shelf date? I believe we missed it. And the effect of President Trump's views on this, he thinks it's a hoax, like the Green New Deal is a hoax, and the things that they've been talking to us for the last several decades are a hoax. I feel that way too, because I've been doing this for a very long time. But have the things that President Trump has implemented, like the doing away with regulations, drilling, doing away with the wind, those windmills that are so detrimental to the environment in a very real way, is that having an effect around the globe? Are we making progress pushing back on this nonsense? We're going to talk about that today with Cal Barsner of Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Cal's been a friend of mine for years, and he is an expert in his field, and he's going to tell you all about that. So we're going to have a great discussion on that. But first, I just want you to know that to date in the year 2025, Preborn, which so many of you have supported so faithfully, has rescued, you have rescued, because of your donations, 38,593 babies. And we've also seen 4,338 women, the mothers of those babies, come to Christ, because that's part of Preborn's mission. That's why I love what they do. I say, and I say again, it's not enough in poverty to feed someone if you don't tell them about the bread of life. We want to help people in an eternal way, not just a temporal way. But sometimes the temporal way, feeding them or stopping an abortion, is the way to get to their heart, and that's what we're trying to do for the Lord Jesus. So thank you for supporting Preborn. And also, thanks to your generosity, Preborn has placed 56 life-saving ultrasound machines in various pregnancy centers. And that's, of course, the nut of what happens, at least physically, in those clinics. Because when the moms see their babies in 4D ultrasound, they just don't abort them. Most of them just don't. There are some exceptions. But it is a powerful, natural tool to show people the value of life. So we thank God for the technology that he's allowed us to develop as human beings, and also for your partnership in making this happen. If you have not joined our little family of helpers for Preborn, I invite you to do that today. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. All right, well, take out a pencil and paper, because we're going to school today. Only it's the school of life. This is the stuff we see on television. We see all of our politicians waxing eloquent about the climate change and the Green New Deal. President Biden certainly did that. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez certainly did that. And so many others. John Kerry, it just goes on and on. What is the update on that? What is happening with that, with wind and solar, with all the natural disasters we've been having? Are they connected to global warming? We're going to discuss all of that with Cal Beisner of Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
On Plugged In, President Joe Biden challenges world leaders on climate change with an ambitious goal for the United States.
The United States sets out on the road to cut greenhouse gases in half by the end of this decade.
Reaching those goals relies on technologies that reduce emissions from cars and trucks.
We want trucks to be green, and we want them to do a lot of green miles per day.
It is not just the air that needs to be clean. Solar and hydropower push the wheel that cleans the water.
The trash wheels have picked up over 1,600 tons of trash and debris from the Baltimore Harbor over the past 7 years.
The innovations already in use and those still to be developed on Plugged In, the climate change crisis.
All right. Well, crisis or maybe not a crisis. We've been being told for a long time that the Earth is going to be destroyed. I think Greta Van Susteren already reached her shelf life. We should have long gone. But that's the kind of thing we've been hearing for the last several decades. By the way, that was Greta Van Susteren. You know, you think of Greta as, you think she's conservative because she's on Fox, but she's not. She started out on CNN, not so conservative. So just for the record, a programming note. Well, when it comes to the environment, when I started on radio, this is something that I'm not a scientist. That's probably my weakest discipline, really, is the thing that I know a little, maybe sports. On the other hand, it might be sports. But I'm no scientist. But I had to learn from people who were really keen on what was happening in the world and how we could interpret the cooling and the warming and all of the things that we were being warned about. And one of those people was my next guest. His name is Cal Beisner. Cal is a theologian, also a scientist. He has so many monikers. But before I met Cal, he was very concerned about the environment and actually wrote this treatise, which was called the Cornwall Alliance. Cal, you should join me because I probably need your help already. First of all, good morning and thanks for joining us. But did you write that Cornwall Declaration before the Cornwall Alliance was founded?
Yes, one could more accurately say, more precisely, I drafted what became the Cornwall Declaration. The Acton Institute, good friends of ours, did a gathering of environmental ethics scholars in West Cornwall, Connecticut in late 1999. And coming out of that, a number of us said, hey, we really had great conversations there. Let's do a two-page statement of principles. And it kind of fell to me as the writer, the journalist, to draft that. And then it went back and forth among a bunch of us and wound up being made public in March of 2000 with the signatures of over 3,000, mostly religious leaders at that time. But since then, it's gained thousands more signatures, including lots and lots of environmental scientists and economists and other theologians and philosophers and the like. So, yeah, that came out then, and then it wasn't until 5 years later that a group of us launched what became, a couple of years later after that, the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation.
Okay, so let me just give people an idea what you're talking about here. I think there are a lot of words we could use, and I'm going to use some, because you've got here your mission written out, and this will help people to understand what we're going to talk about here. Your mission was, we seek to magnify the glory of God in creation, the wisdom of his truth in environmental stewardship, the kindness of his mercy in lifting the needy out of poverty, and the wonders of his grace in the gospel of Jesus Christ. To this end, we work to educate the public and policymakers about biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and the gospel of Jesus Christ with the Christian worldview, theology, and ethics that undergird it. So I think people will want to know, Cal, what brought this on? When I first met you, I was in D.C., and I was seeing the beginnings of this. I was seeing evangelicals, especially the National Association of Evangelicals, being peeled away from some of the foundational faith stands that we had taken. I could say more about that, but for you, what was the catalyst that you saw that something was happening in the environmental sphere that you needed to step in and do something?
Well, Sandy, it really arose out of my earlier work specifically on economics, and economics can be applied to lots of different areas. I wrote a book, General Introduction to Economics, called Prosperity and Poverty, the Compassionate Use of Resources in a World of Scarcity, for Crossway Books' Turning Point Christian Worldview series back in 1988. And one chapter of that was supposed to be on how population and resources and environmental quality are related to each other. And I told the series editors back then, no, we can't do that in a chapter. And they said, all right, just do another book just on that, which I did, called Prospects for Growth, A Biblical View of Population, Resources, and the Future, published in 1990. Those resulted in my just having a reputation as a scholar in those fields. And so I was invited to participate in seminars and colloquia and whatnot, and eventually invited to teach at Covenant College in Lookout Mountain, Georgia, for 8 years in the 1990s. And what my great concern partly rose out of my own prior experience in seeing really abject poverty. Very early in life, my father was with the U.S. State Department and posted to Kolkata in India. And for about 6 months, my mother was so ill that she could not take care of me. And so I was taken every day to an Indian family where I spent the day. Along the way, as my nurse took me there, we were going over the bodies, stepping over the bodies of people who had died overnight of starvation and disease, hundreds of them, because of the extreme poverty there. And when I realized in the mid to late 1980s, as I studied environmentalism in more and more depth, that a lot of environmental policy tended to slow, stop, or even reverse economic development and the conquest of poverty, I just thought, oh, somebody's got to be answering this. And there were various other scholars who were, but we needed more, and we needed particularly a Christian voice, because many Christians, I think with the very best of motives, looking, for instance, at Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the sea and all that dwell therein, people know God cares about his earth. God made it to his own glory. And we should be good stewards of it. And so with very good motivations, a lot of Christians were beginning to latch into the environmental movement, despite the fact that much of it was harmful to the poor. So my aim was to develop an understanding of how we can combine good stewardship of God's beautiful creation with the elements that are absolutely indispensable to lifting and keeping whole societies out of poverty.
You know, I'm going to jump ahead a couple of decades here with you, because I want to play the other side claims that their approach to the environment is going to help the poor. You know they do. And so I thought it would be a good idea to just stop for a second. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she is describing from behind her mask, by the way, if she sounds muffled, the Green New Deal. And just listen. I want people to listen for what she says about how that's going to affect people in poverty. This is clip five.
That is what the Green New Deal is all about. It's about really putting people to work, creating 20 million jobs in this country so that we can invest in infrastructure. And by the way, make sure that low income and communities of color and white working class communities aren't left behind. Because if we don't make these kinds of investments, then the wealthy, the privileged, and the powerful get to keep their lights on, and everybody else has to go weeks, days, or in the case of Hurricane Maria, months or even a year without power. And so this is about equity. This is about acknowledging the reality of climate change. This is about protecting people, and this is about creating prosperity in the first place. And so we have to really, all of us, that is why what's happening in Texas is important to our whole country, because it's a freeze here this week. It could be a freeze in California next week. It could be, you know, another tropical storm or hurricane in New York in a couple of months. This is about all of us and how we're going to collectively answer climate change.
Okay, so that was a big bucket of a lot of things. But honestly, on the issue of poverty, and you've explained this to me before, Cal, but it's really the opposite. There, and we can talk about the Green New Deal in more detail in a second, but in general, they claim they're helping the poor, and you're claiming that they're not helping the poor. Can you explain that?
Well, first, what AOC said there is so full of, at least, you know, at best, confusion, and at worst, just outright lies. It's really amazing. To say that we're going to help the poor by giving them jobs in the renewable energy sector is insane. You know, a job is not actually a benefit. A job is a cost. That's why people have to pay you to take on a job, right? And Milton Friedman famously advised the Chinese when they very proudly showed off to him how they were using people with picks and shovels to dig a canal, because this was wonderful. It provided employment for the poor. He said, oh, well, my goodness, why don't you just give them teaspoons instead, and then you could employ far more people. The point of employment is to produce lots of stuff. And the more stuff you can produce with the fewer hours of human labor, the better off people are. So the notion that by fighting climate change by using renewable fuels, which require more human time investment per gigawatt hour of electricity produced than fossil fuels or nuclear, that's just lousy, stupid economics. Now, what's really ironic in AOC's statement is that she ignores the fact that since it is more expensive to generate usable energy in the form of electricity or transportation fuels from wind and solar than it is from coal, oil, and natural gas, the result is higher prices for that energy. Well, the poor spend a higher percentage of their budgets on energy than do the wealthy. So whereas those higher prices might be a minor inconvenience to average and wealthy Americans, they can be devastating to people in the bottom quintile or even the bottom two quintiles, the bottom 40% of American wage earners. They tend to spend anywhere from 30 to 40% of their income monthly just on energy, either directly or indirectly. Raise the cost of energy by, say, 50%. They're devastated. So, no, this is not something that helps the poor. The poor need abundant, affordable, reliable energy to rise and stay out of poverty. And the notion that we're going to fight climate change by substituting wind and solar for coal, oil, and natural gas means that we go to less abundant, more expensive, therefore less affordable, and less reliable energy, and that hurts everybody, but the poor especially.
You know, Cal, one other thing I remember you saying years ago when we started talking about this, because of your background that you already described, of the poverty that you saw in India and how it imprinted you, you talk about how using these other forms of energy like coal, oil, and natural gas actually was helping the poorest people, because otherwise they were building fires. And you talked about the damage that fires do. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, well, somewhere in the neighborhood of a quarter of the people around the world get most of their energy still from burning wood and dried dung on open fires, either just outside or just inside their huts. The smoke from that, the UN Fund for Population Activities estimates that kills in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 million people a year, and it gives long-term respiratory diseases to many, many more people that keep them from having the bodily strength to work well, to build wealth, and climb out of poverty. So, you know, the notion that those people who can't afford energy better than wood and dry dung are suddenly going to afford more expensive energy from wind and solar rather than moving up the energy ladder the way we did in the wealthy West, from wood and dung to first coal, then petroleum, then natural gas. That notion is just absurd, and it spells keeping more people in severe poverty. You know, the average sub-Saharan African woman spends almost 8 hours a day doing nothing but gathering sticks, fallen branches from trees, and dried dung, and taking them back to her hut for a little cooking, a little heat in the winter, and that's about it. Instead, the average American spends just a few minutes a day earning the money necessary to pay his entire energy bill.
Wow.
So imagine that you had to spend 8 hours a day doing nothing but just paying for your energy. What would you have left to pay for food, clothing, shelter, medical care, education, a vacation, for crying out loud?
Yeah.
No, this is the West thumbing its nose at the rest and saying, let them eat cake.
Yeah, really. Yeah, so setting the record straight, which you just did. And now I want to rewind because I started to tell this story, but I should tell it better. My first experience in Washington, D.C. Now, I've been covering this stuff I remember covering population control years ago. That was the first entree I had into all this stuff, that we needed less people. We could actually kill people. This would be better. The earth would be better, and all of that kind of discussion. But then it moved into, you know, the global warming and climate change. But as a leader of Concerned Women for America, we would work, of course, with other organizations that were Christian, that were working in public policy. And we worked with the National Association of Evangelicals. That was a highly respected organization, Cal. And in my church, raising my children, we would on Sundays have a bulletin within our bulletin of the National Association of Evangelicals, and they would tell us in a concise way what was happening in Washington, what we needed to pray for, what we needed to take action on. We had their speakers, their spokespersons in our church. It was a really highly respected organization. So Rich Cizik was the head of the National Association of Evangelicals 20 plus years ago when I was there and when I met you. And suddenly, Rick started being very strange on some basic issues that we worked together on. And we had no idea what was happening. And we found out later, especially on the environment, he really stepped out and became part of the environmental movement. He was being subsidized by George Soros. And so I'm going to turn it over to you because you know a lot about that. And by the way, Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation is celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. And that's one of the reasons that Cal are talking today. So, Cal, congratulations, really. A hearty congratulations.
You. Thank you very much.
Okay, so 20 years ago, we had Rich Cizik at the National Association of Evangelicals. What can you say about that particular thing or others like it during that time?
Yeah. Well, Cizik, like a number of evangelical leaders, was brought to Windsor Castle in England, the royal castle there, for seminars put on by the British so-called evangelical, and I'll get to that in a moment, climate scientist Sir John Houghton. And he was making the case for the notion of catastrophic man-made climate change. And, you know, he was a real climate scientist, but frankly, I think he had failed to consider adequately the failings, the weaknesses of computerized climate models. And so he had bought into a very exaggerated notion of how much warming you get from adding a little bit of CO2 to the atmosphere. A number of other climate scientists have pointed that out at great length. But what was happening was these evangelicals were being taken there, going through that, seeing only one side of the story, and of course being wined and dined in this incredibly opulent location. And frankly, they were wowed, as well as in many cases bought off by large donations to the organizations that they represented, whether those were from George Soros or from the Rockefeller Foundation or the Hewlett Foundation or the Tides Foundation or so on and on. Many different liberal foundations were all pushing this. And as a result, you saw this movement to start what was originally under the Evangelical Environmental Network, the Evangelical Climate Initiative, which released a statement in 2005 on climate change and evangelical call to action, which was endorsed right away by 86 different presidents of evangelical Christian colleges around the country, not one of whom, by the way, had any expertise in climate science. But they basically were told, hey, if you care about the poor, then you need to care about this because climate change will hurt the poor more than it hurts anybody else. Now, that was true. But it's also true that everything else hurts the poor more than anything else because the poor, being poor, can't protect themselves from crime or climate change or warfare or anything else, illness, as well as wealthier people can. Now, you had all these people sign on, and then we at the Cornwall Alliance, that was actually before we took on that name, we were at the time called the Interfaith Stewardship Alliance, we put out a new paper by a number of climate scientists and environmental economists that refuted everything in their paper. And the result was that the National Association of Evangelicals did not at first sign on to that. And eventually Rich Cizik was so upset about that that it kind of led toward his leaving the NAE. But the damage was already done, and eventually the NAE did sign on to that kind of thinking. But we, meanwhile, published every several years, we would publish a new major research paper with the scientific evidence that whereas human-induced global warming through the emission of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases is real, and there are some challenges that come from it, it is by no means catastrophic, and the benefits of the energy that we get far outweigh the risks that come from that climate change. But not only that, but also the CO2 that we put into the air not only warms the earth a little bit, right? But it also, it enhances plant growth a lot. And the result of that is more crop yields, more food for everything that eats plants or eats something that does eat plants. And that's best of all for the poor because they're the ones who have the toughest time affording food. It also, by the way, means that animals that depend on plants, and that means all animals, have greater access to food in more places around the world. So if you're worried about the so-called sixth great extinction, which itself is a myth, but if you're worried about that, you should be glad for the added vegetation made possible by more CO2 in the atmosphere because it means animals have more food. They're not as likely to go extinct. As a matter of fact, NASA estimates that the amount of vegetation added to the world just because of more CO2 in the atmosphere from 1990 to, if I remember correctly, the year was 2016, was equivalent to twice as much vegetation as on the entire continental United States. That's great news.
Absolutely. So that was kind of a dipping your toe in the water, and you had good success with that. I want to say, as a side note, I want to help people to understand that that was a template. That whole exercise with NAE and Rich Cizik and others was a template for what's happened on many other issues. Megan Basham has exposed a lot of that in her book, Shepherds for Sale. Shepherds for Sale. And they call it Rent an Evangelical. And so you had then Jim Wallace, who on the issue of homosexuality became a missionary to a softer way to view that issue. And I remember him coming to Wheaton College and really was the beginning to me, because my son went to Wheaton. I lived in Wheaton for many years. That was the beginning of the softening of the soil at Wheaton College for other things. So they did it on other issues.
If I can interrupt for just a second.
Sure.
It's not just Jim Wallace on this. There are others. Rich Cizik eventually caved in on homosexuality. And the author of the Evangelical Declaration on Climate Change, David Gushy, who at the time was an ethics professor of all things at Union University, when he left Union, basically because he was utterly embarrassed by his performance in a debate with me over climate change, and it was clear that he had written on an area that he didn't really understand. When he left Union, he quickly liberalized on all sorts of different issues, including homosexuality. And it's, you know, one would wonder, why? Why does that happen? Well, I think it's because these people don't recognize that the Bible teaches on all kinds of different things. And the Bible tells us, for instance, that when God had created everything, He declared it all very good in Genesis 1:31, right? Well, that includes the climate system. But the notion that we're going to have catastrophic climate change from a minuscule change in atmospheric chemistry, CO2 going from 28 thousandths of 1% to 56 thousandths of 1% over a period of about 250 years, that notion implies that the climate system is extremely fragile and likely to go into catastrophic results from tiny influences. That would not be very good. And so if you're going to abandon what the Bible has to teach us about the robustness of God's creation, it's easy to abandon what the Bible teaches us also about ethics, like on homosexuality or abortion, both of which Rich Cizik and David Gushy eventually embraced. So it all hangs together. We have a worldview from Scripture, and we need to be sure that we hold to it consistently.
Absolutely, Cal. That's why we do what we do. That's exactly what I'm committed to also, is the truth of God's Word related to the issues, the things that we live, the problems that we face. I think you can find, we may not know in an instant what is really true about, say, COVID or whatever the controversy is, but I think God gives discernment and principles in Scripture which helps lead to that. Okay, so going back to that, so global warming, I think you got a gift because I remember in 2009 that scandal at the University of East Anglia's climatic research unit, where there were some leaked emails, which sort of showed that scientists were doing exactly what you said they were doing. They were manipulating data and suppressing any kind of dissenting views about global warming. How do you think that affected the whole issue? Did it have a really detrimental effect on the notion of climate change? Or I'm not sure what it would be, global warming then, I guess.
Yeah. ClimateGate was a really fascinating thing to watch because, yes, indeed, roughly 11,000 emails got posted online, and they revealed that some of the climate scientists at the very center of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, as well as the University of East Anglia's Climatic Research Unit, were, as you said, suppressing data, fabricating data, misusing data. They were intimidating scientists who had opposing viewpoints. They took control of the editorial process at major scientific publications, and they kept the dissidents from being published. All kinds of just nasty stuff that shouldn't be any part of the scientific process. That caused a lot of trouble for a while. But the problem was that the control of the mainline scientific journals was already in the hands of the alarmists. And because of that, they could just simply keep the door closed to the publications of perfectly good climate scientists who didn't toe the line. So eventually, that one kind of blew over. What's been happening over the last, roughly 6 or 7 years, though, is that bit by bit, more and more climate scientists who were previously not outspoken on either side are recognizing that the evidence is just not as robust as the alarmists had said, and more have been coming out of the closet, so to speak, and publishing their dissents. And just recently, in fact, back on July 29, the federal EPA and the Department of Energy released documents. The EPA released proposed new rules that would eliminate the carbon dioxide endangerment finding, a very important piece of regulation passed back in 2009 by the EPA under Obama, that ruled that carbon dioxide is a dangerous pollutant according to the Clean Air Act. There was never any good science under that, and now the EPA proposes rescinding that rule. It goes through a comment period of, I believe, 60 days, and I think it will wind up becoming permanent, and that'll be a wonderful thing. It will result in much lower energy prices and a much more stable grid for everybody in America. The Department of Energy published a major paper, research paper, showing that whereas human influence on climate change is real, it's not catastrophic, and the benefits of the energy and of the added CO2 in the atmosphere far outweigh the slight, slight risks that come from the slight global warming that we get from CO2 added to the atmosphere. And by the way, three of the five authors of that major research paper from the Department of Energy are Cornwall Alliance-related people. Dr. Roy Spencer is a board member and a senior fellow. He's been with us since the start. Dr. Ross McKittrick has been an advisor from the start and has co-authored many of our research papers. And Dr. John R. Christie has also been an advisor from the start. And he and Roy both were contributors to our recent book, Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism, which became an Amazon bestseller within a week or so of its release back in March of 2024. We still offer it on our website, cornwallalliance.org/shop. That's cornwallalliance.org/shop. And the big book is Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism.
Okay, very good. That's great. That's a great resource. I'm glad you mentioned it, Cal. All right, I'm going to we'll do a fast track here because I want to play something else for you because I think there's enough doubt about global warming now, I think, has been inserted into the dialogue, at least in this country. Mm-hmm. But then this is the other one that is very confusing for people. Our favorite person, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, has to weigh in on this with her mask again. And she'll explain it. This is clip four.
So many of us have been caught in a disaster in one way or another, and very sadly and unfortunately, climate change is making these kinds of disasters worse, more frequent, and with a lot more intensity. And so, you know, just a few years ago, we had these devastating floods in the Midwest. We've been hit in New York with Hurricane Sandy. You know, we had Harvey here in Houston, and now we have fires in California, freezes. It is sad. But this is part of our new normal as a country, and we're going to have to really get really good at responding to these disasters swiftly and effectively, and also making the infrastructure investments necessary to prevent these kind of catastrophic chain impacts from happening again.
Okay, so I'll cut to the nut here. She's claiming that these disasters, and so are many, many, many others, Cal, and people are wondering, you know, we've had all those fires in California. We had the flooding of the camp in Texas, and on we could go. Tornadoes. So is global warming causing this, and how can we say that it isn't?
Look, what she said, she may very well believe, so I can't say that it's a lie, because you only lie if you say what you know is false. But I can say it's all false, period. Simple. No question about that. Even the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change agrees that there is no solid empirical evidence for an increase in the frequency or the intensity of any extreme weather events. Not hurricanes, not droughts, not floods, not heat waves, not cold snaps, not tornadoes, not thunderstorms, not wildfires. There is no increase in the frequency or intensity of any of those. If anything, over the period of allegedly largely man-made global warming, which would be basically from 1960 to the present, there has been a slight decrease in the frequency and intensity of hurricanes around the world. That's raw data. Why do people make these claims? Because computer climate models predict that as the world gets warmer, you're going to see more frequent and more intense extreme weather events. But models are not reality. And the key to science, as the late Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman put it, is that when you want to understand how something works in nature, first you guess, then you make predictions based on your guess of what you should see in the real world if your guess is right. Then you look at that real world and you compare your observations with your predictions. And if your observations contradict your predictions, then your guess is wrong, period. Well, the climate models are the guess. Their predictions are what we have to compare with the real world. And the real world says their predictions are false. Therefore, we know there's something wrong with the climate models. We know, for instance, that they predict more than twice as much warming as actually observed over the last 40 years, if you run them in reverse to retrodict, right? We know that. We know that they make all kinds of other errors. So the fact is that the models are the only basis for this claim that global warming is making extreme weather events more frequent and severe. And the actual real-world data say no, so the models are wrong.
Okay, so thank you for that answer. And that, I didn't even know that, so that's great to know. I have my own thoughts about it. I sort of always say, you know, I actually think God's in control of that stuff. I think that's above our pay grade, but that now the facts actually do play bear that out. But okay, so a couple of other things. You mentioned that the EPA and the Department of Energy have both are both working on kind of setting the record straight and pulling us back to truth.
Yes.
When it comes to the environment. President Trump is ordering, you know, he's already okayed a drilling and the production of more coal, oil, and the use of our natural gas. He's already declared that the windmills, as we know, because of research, that they kill the natural terrain. They kill whales. They kill fish. They do tremendous damage. So, and then solar, the jury's out. So my question is, President Trump is going against the grain of the international community. Do you think that the United States policies on these things is having an effect like on the EU or any of the Paris Accord, any of that stuff?
Yes, and I think actually there's Trump likes the word reciprocal about tariffs. Well, there is a reciprocal relationship going on between the United States and developing countries around the world. You know, leaders of developing countries, especially India and China, have for the last, five, six, 7 years or more, been saying, no, we are not willing to embrace these policies to replace fossil fuels with wind and solar because our people cannot afford that. The most important job we have is to see our people rise and stay out of poverty. So we're not going to go for that. Well, as long as the United States and the rest of the developed world stayed in lockstep. That was tough for the developing countries to live by. But now that President Trump has led the United States back out of the Paris Climate Treaty, now that his EPA and his Department of Energy, and by the way, the Department of Interior is going along with these things, they're taking the lead. We're going to see a wonderful reciprocity going on between the U.S. and developing countries. And I think the result is going to be that the developed countries that have embraced climate alarm are going to realize we're either going to stick with our convictions about climate alarm and impoverish our people and lose more and more business, especially industry, to the developing world, or we're going to back off and we're going to weaken our commitments on climate issues and allow our industries to thrive with abundant, affordable, reliable energy from coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, rather than insisting on wind and soil and solar. So I think that's where we're headed. Obviously, the battles are not over. The climate alarmists are all up in arms about the new rules by the EPA and the Department of Energy. But it's a winnable battle, and I'm very much encouraged about it. The Cornwall Alliance is going to continue to work on that. And as you mentioned, this is our 20th anniversary. And if I may, Sandy, mention, during the month of August, any donations that come to us, they can come to us online through cornwallalliance.org/donate or /anniversary. Any donations will be doubled by some very generous donors who've pledged to double anything up to a combined $100,000.
You know, I should also say that, Cal, you have a network of nearly 70 Christian theologians, scientists, economists, and other scholars, and you are in the business of educating people, and you just mentioned the success you've had at the EPA. I think that's just terrific, or the Energy Department. Yeah, the Energy Department. And you have a weekly e-newsletter. You have a weekly podcast called Created to Reign. You do major research and policy papers. You provide speakers for churches and colleges. And that's a lot of your, it's your other, not just you, it's the people that work with you, expert witnesses for legislative and regulative bodies, books and videos and social media. So they really are running a very effective operation. And I think that you have a lot to do, Cal, with how things have turned to the better, to truth, I guess I would say. And so I want to say again to you, congratulations. Remember, it's cornwallalliance.org. And I suppose at that you can donate, or you can go to the shop and buy something, or you can also inquire or get materials that they have on that website. Maybe your kids studying in school, or a supplement for your kids in college. And just a last word from you, Cal.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kids and studying, we've just launched our first online course, Basic Climate Science, taught by retired climatology professor at the University of Delaware, Dr. David Arla Gates, who is our director of research and education. And recently I spoke with one of our donors, and he said, hey, I'm going to take that course with my grandson. And I thought, what a great idea. Get grandparents and grandkids together taking an online course where both are learning, but they're also having that together time. So I'm very excited about how Cornwall Alliance now can contribute not only to the debate about climate change and other environmental issues, but also to grandparents developing their relationships with their grandkids. So those interested, go to cornwallalliance.org, click on the courses tab at the top of the page, and find out about basic climate science, and you can do that. And so, Sandy, thank you so much for having me on the program again. We've been doing this on and off for, golly, pretty close to 20 years.
20 years,
I
think 20 years.
I appreciate your wonderful interviewing.
Thank you. Well, I've learned a lot from you, Cal, and I appreciate it. And I think that's a great idea about taking that course with your grandkids. I'm going to look into that myself. That's a great suggestion. Again, it's cornwallalliance.org. For all of those things, and the person at the center of all of it, the brain trust for all of this, the guy who God laid it on his heart is Cal Beisner. And so, Cal, thank you so much for all you've done. And thank you for joining us to make us smarter today, too. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Sandy. God bless you.
Thank you. Same to you. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Across the world, from India to Arizona, extreme heat is getting worse. Every summer, millions of people are suffering through deadly heat waves that have been made more frequent and more intense by climate change. The continued burning of fossil fuels releases carbon to the atmosphere. This helps to trap heat at the Earth's surface, causing the global average temperature to rise over time. So what happens if this continues? Already the world has warmed by 1.3 degrees Celsius since the start of the Industrial Revolution, when Western countries began burning coal and other fossil fuels. But that's just the global average. That higher baseline temperature means that heat waves are now hotter than they would have been without such warming. The world is currently on track to warm by nearly 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. Heat waves, in turn, will only get worse. More and more cities are creating extreme heat action plans to adapt to rising temperatures. But scientists worry that some parts of the world will experience unsurvivable humid heat in the coming decades, spurring mass migration to escape death.
Okay. Well, why is it that it's all these young girls who are such experts in this? Like, that was Reuters. And they all sound so dead. I mean, they're just dead. They recite in a certain way. I don't know. I just think that this... there is something very dark and has been for decades about the environmental movement. I'll never forget a good friend of mine whose name is famous. He used to write in one of the most famous magazines in the country and used to be my guest on the environment. And I can't mention his name because this story is his and he told me privately. But he actually started out in California and he was a big believer in the environmental movement. And then he told me off the air once because I'd never met him before, but we talked so frequently from my studio in Chicago that you build a friendship sometimes. And so off the air, he told me that he had become a follower of Christ. He said, because what I saw in that movement was so dark and so wicked and just demonic. That was the word that he used. It was like the pit of hell I was working with every day and staring into. And he said he thought there had to be something else. And it was through that and his questions about that he became a Christian. And he didn't want people to know that at the time because he was writing, you know, these articles for that population, but speaking the truth to them. And he still does, by the way. He's still going strong. But I think it's a very dark thing, and I think really and truly this is why I believe a lot of our kids are in these areas of the country and in the world where this is the kind of stuff they hear from these kinds of people who are soulless. They're just soulless. This is why the despair, the lack of hope. And when you're told by someone like Greta Thunberg, that your life is going to end in 12 years, your planet's going to end, it brings despair. And I actually, some friends of ours, their granddaughter just took her life, her own life, in Seattle, Washington. And I'm telling you, I think these kinds of things that are being taught to our kids in this way, devoid of God and any kind of hope, is lending itself to that kind of despair. So that's why our conversation today was important, among other things. I want to remind you that you can go to CornwallAlliance.org, CornwallAlliance.org, and avail yourself of their information. I love what Cal said about that basic climate science. I've got it here in front of me. I think I'm going to enroll. But they have lots of other courses, and of course they have books and a podcast and all kinds of things. And so, and they also could use your help. Cal is the kind of guy, I always say the guys who are the true blue, the real patriots, the real people that love God and want to do what's right, they never are wealthy. They just aren't. They aren't. I can't think of very many exceptions. And so Cornwall Alliance could use your help in this 20th year. And so I invite you to go to cornwallalliance.org and make a donation to them. Just help them a little bit. And I know that he will appreciate that, and so will I, because the truth needs to get out to all of our young people and our big people too. Well, I want to thank you for listening today. I want to thank, of course, Timothy Plan, because they show you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.